It's a great privilege to be able to share the word of Jesus, isn't it? These passages in John's Gospel are so precious. If you haven't got a Bible and you'd like one, then maybe put your hand up and... Danny will be able to bring something round to assist you. So we're in John's Gospel and chapter 13. Ian's not here. I think Ian's preaching next week. I'm nicking a little bit of his chapter as well. He's not here, so I can do that. Ian, when he introduced this a couple of weeks ago, he had written this kind of retrospective on the life of Jesus, maybe from a distance of 50, 60 years, looking back through the history of the church, and had come to the end of his life. I guess he knew he was approaching the end of his life, and there were things that he wanted to set down and to write. He got the other three Gospels, I guess, to read. And he'd seen the disciples, the various apostles had come. Many of them had been executed, had lost their lives. He'd seen the firebrand Paul arise, and his time of ministry, and he too had lost his life in the service of the gospel. And John's gospel is this looking back, and he drops in little words of explanation that illuminate the text as we read through. So let's just start at the beginning of chapter 13, if you've got it. Where he said it was just before the Passover festival. Now, if you remember at the beginning of chapter 12, I'm getting a little bit of echo. Is that okay? I don't know what it's sounding like. At the beginning of chapter 12, it said it was 5-6 days to go, and now it is the day before. So in one chapter we've gone through 5 days and we're into the last. Jesus knew that the hour had come. Literally, this was the last hour. The last hour that he was with his beloved 12 that he'd picked. And he goes on, the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And I think this is the key for me from not just this chapter, but from John's writing, is this theme of love. If Paul's revelation from God was that of faith and grace, John's revelation was love. And again, all the more powerful. Sorry, my voice is going. Been singing too much, John. You need to have less loud songs, okay, so that the preacher doesn't lose his voice. Looking back, it was this theme of love, wasn't it, that it runs through John's writing. The greatest verse, the most common verse that everybody knows, for God so loved the world. That was John's revelation from Jesus, was how much he loved the world, that he gave his only begotten son, James, you star. Thank you. Thank you so much. That's great. And there's another verse. That's John 3:16, isn't it? When the people, when whoever put the chapters and verses to the Bible, when they got to 1 John 3:16, they put another verse, which is even more crucial. And John said that I might challenge you. This is the verse that challenges me. By this we know love, John wrote, because he laid down his life for us, and we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. Now, let that sink in. You think of what Jesus went through in this last hour and in the subsequent 3-4 hours after the end of chapter 17. We also ought to lay down our lives. This is love. John was the disciple whom Jesus loved. That's how he described it. Again, this retrospective, looking back, I was the disciple that Jesus loved. I mean, that can be your testimony too. you're the one that Jesus loved. Of course he loves everybody else. And John was never saying that he was the only one that Jesus loved. That wasn't true. But there was a personal link between him and Jesus. And that's how it is for us. He's the one who loves us. I am the one that he loves. And my prayer this morning, and I think we've been there already, is the intimacy that Jesus has with us now, even as he spent this last period of time, this last hour with his disciples. So, verse 2. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around him. You see, there was a spiritual battle brewing at this moment in time. The devil had already prompted Judas. We know that from the other Gospels that he'd been to see the Jewish leaders, and a plan had been hatched, and he was going to do whatever he was going to do, and there was a transaction, there was a sum of money, 30 pieces of silver, all that had happened. And so the devil was active at this point. Do you know, if you ever watched the Lord of the Rings movies, the impression of sort of impending doom, of darkness closing in. Well, that's how it was at this particular. The principalities and powers were focused on destroying Jesus, and Judas was part of that plan. But God was active too. God was active as well. He was down on his knees washing his disciples' feet. That was God's action. And it just, I've got some, let's just put some of these words up. Oops, the other way maybe. Nope. I'm not doing well here. Which way do we go? Got left and right and up and down. And nothing is moving. Oh, there we go. Right. I was meant to put that up earlier. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Just highlight that one in your mind. I'm not doing well on this. Right. Ah, that's good. That's good. He poured water into a basin. Just hold that one. Because there's something extremely upside down. I know this has been said many times about the way God's operations work and the way human operations work. And Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, which means in kind of human terms, he was at the top of the organogram. You know, they have companies and what have organograms. I've got a picture of one here which the writing's a bit small. I nicked this. It's the British Army and the ranks in the officers. Okay, and you start off at the top with the field marshal. He's the head waller. He's in charge. Everything is under his authority. And then you work your way down through generals and lieutenants and brigadiers and majors and all the rest, round down to the officer cadets at the bottom. And of course, there's even more under that, down to the squaddy on the ground with the rifle. But this is the triangle of authority, which you'll find in the army. You find it in companies. I know our company is the same as a CEO somewhere up in the clouds, and I'm down below the bottom somewhere. But that's how things are organized in the world. And in that sense, this would have been the same, I guess, in the Roman army. They operated the same. It would have been the same in a Jewish household of that time, with the father figure at the top, and then his wife and children and daughters-in-law and so on, and then children, and then below that there would be servants and potentially slaves, and right at the bottom right at the bottom would be the slave girl, and it would have been her duty in that kind of family to have washed the feet of the visitors to the household. And here we have Jesus, who is at the top, washing the feet. That is the magnitude of the upside downness. Now, here we have an organogram of kind of church and Christian. We've got God at the top, okay, and then you've got maybe this maybe represents Saltisford to some extent. You've got a leadership team, you've got various sub leaders, group leaders, and then you've got the congregation, young people, children, and so on. But that's sort of roughly how it looks. If you apply that to the Church of England, you might have, you know, the Archbishop of Canterbury instead of the leadership team, and the various bishops and vicars and so on, and then eventually at the bottom you have congregations. If you're in the Catholic Church, it could be the Pope and then the cardinals and all that stuff. That's sort of how it works. And yet, you remember, if you were here last week, how Bob was talking about the Greek people who came and they told Andrew that they wanted to see Jesus. And Andrew went to, was it Andrew? I think so. Andrew went to see Peter, and Peter went to see Jesus, and these people went. And Bob said, you know, Jesus doesn't need intermediaries. There is no, you can go straight to Jesus. And my sense this morning of the intimacy that we have with Jesus was just overwhelming. And therefore, it's the real pattern should be like this. This is what I tried to draw it, and it kind of worked. The leadership team are at the bottom, okay? Their role is to lift those above, to make that direct contact with Jesus at the top. That's the role. Of course, we have a link with Jesus as well, but we don't take stuff and pass it down. We lift you up. That's our role. That's the role of leadership in the church, is forever to encourage, to lift you up, because that is where we all need to be, don't we? In this personal contact, this personal link with Jesus, and he will speak to you and encourage you and lift you up. Right, it's moving on. So Jesus is washing the disciples' feet. And he came to Simon Peter and said to who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Now, Peter, I kind of imagine if you, with this circle of disciples, and Jesus is doing this extraordinary thing, there would have been complete silence. But when it comes to Peter, Peter's the one who says what everybody else was thinking. Good old Peter says, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? It took me back years and years ago when I was but a young Christian. We were meeting for a, it was a prayer thing, I think, with another group of similar age guys and gals in a little house in Wise Terrace in Leamington. And part of the way through the prayer meeting, one of the girls got up and went into the kitchen and came back with the washing up bowl full of water and a towel and some soap, and started to go round those of us who were there, taking shoes and socks off and washing their feet. And I was with Peter. I was just mortified. I was thinking, oh, did I have clean socks this morning? Or was it, I forgot that one with a big hole in. You know, oh, my toenails. Oh, no, did I? What are they like? Because Val, for it was she, and Val, if you ever listen to this, this is engraved on my heart all these years later, that her motive was love and service. That's why she felt God had prompted her to go around those of us there and wash our feet. Not because they probably were dirty, but this was in her heart, was love and service. And this is exactly what Jesus was doing here. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Jesus replied, you do not realize what I'm doing, but later you will understand. No, said Peter, you shall never wash my feet. And Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. And I think it was at this point when Jesus said that, that something clicked with Peter and he understood that there was a spiritual dimension to this. This wasn't just a dirty feet issue. There's a spiritual part of what Jesus was doing. It's not just clean feet, it's salvation. And then Lord, because his next words, then Lord, Simon Peter replied, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. I need to be totally clean, not just my feet. And Jesus said, those who've had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean. And you are clean, though not every one of you. For he knew, there's another little John's little drop-ins here. For he knew who was going to betray him. And that was why he said not everyone was clean. So question, why only feet? Now I've pondered this, thought about this over the past week. You know, one of the great things about Jesus is when he wrote these things, he's given them to us and we have him. So when we're stuck, we don't necessarily, it's good to read books, of course it is, but you can just walking through the path, what on earth is going on here, Lord? Can you just tell me what you meant? And so then you sort of think, well, I'll trust the Lord that, you know, what he says is what I should pass on. God's intention, I believe, through what the work of Jesus was, is to not only forgive, but to cancel, to cleanse, to separate us from sin. Salvation is total. There is no more that needs to be done. Charles Wesley got the idea when he said cancelled sin. He breaks the power of cancelled sin. You got it, Kathy. I can hear you. You're mouthing the words. That's the extent. The power of sin is broken. And Paul emphasizes this. Read through Romans 5, 6, 7, 8. And you'll get this impression of the power of God against sin. It is not his intention that we should sin ever again. That's the bar that he sets before us. That is Jesus. But we walk in a world where there's mud and dirt, and sometimes we trip, sometimes temptation gets us, sometimes we fail. And that's what Jesus, you remember John says in the beginning of his epistle, he says, my dear children, he wrote, I write this to you so that you will not sin. That was his heart. That's the message of the gospel. Then he said, but if anybody does sin, not when, if, I love that. If anyone sin, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ, the righteous one, and so on. And this is Jesus here, washing one another's feet. Your body is clean. You're saved. There's no doubt about that, all of you. You've given your hearts to the Lord and you're saved. You're free from sin. But we still walk through a broken world. And I think, you know, the stuff that happens, temptation that comes, and we don't quite hit the mark, and we're still okay because Jesus loves us to the end. And that is the washing of feet, I think, that Jesus talks about here. And he goes on, now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Note that the washing of the feet is an example, not something. I think it's right, John, that we don't do it. It doesn't mean anything anymore in our culture, does it? But it's an example. And obviously we can't. We can quote unquote wash one another's feet, and that's what we should do. We cannot forgive sin. That is something that only Jesus does. But the task of loving service from the most menial upwards is something that we can do. And I know that there are those in this church who put me to shame on that front. And sorry, do you know when you get old, you get more emotional? I don't know what it is. But over the past month, there are those in this church who've laid down their lives for others. And God sees, if I've seen it, God's seen it, and praise his name. And that is what it is. That's what it's referring to here, that there is a givenness, a brokenness to serve one another, to love one another. Verse 18, I'm not referring to all of you. I know those I have chosen, but this is to fulfill this passage of Scripture. He who shared my bread has turned against me. Verily I tell you, one of you is going to betray me. His disciples stared at one another at a loss to know which of them he meant. One of them, the disciple whom Jesus loved, was reclining next to him. And Simon Peter motioned to this disciple and said, ask him which one he means. Leaning back on Jesus, he asked him, Lord, who is it? Jesus answered, it's the one to whom I will give this piece of bread when I've dipped it in the dish. Then, dipping the piece of bread, he gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. As soon as Judas took the bread, Satan entered into him. So Jesus told him, what you are about to do, do quickly. As soon as Judas had taken the bread, he went out. And it was night. I guess Jesus' cryptic words must have stunned Judas. Because Judas had laid his plot. As I mentioned earlier, he'd set this up. He'd been to see the Jewish leaders. He'd set up what he was going to do about this and that. And he thought he'd got it all covered off. And then Jesus says this, and he must have realized that everything that he'd done, Jesus knew. And there began this period of utter turmoil for Judas at that point. But I just love the way that Jesus acts through this. Do you know when I read the story, these stories of the Jesus' last few hours, I used to, you know, if only this had happened, if only something had changed, couldn't he have been saved from this awful injustice? And yet Jesus knew what was going to happen and let it all carry on. Just extraordinary fortitude. And even with Judas, he had washed his feet just those moments before. And he didn't intervene. He just let him go. And Judas had so misunderstood him, so tragically and completely. Judas had misunderstood Jesus' mission somehow. Through all these years, he'd missed the whole purpose of what God was doing through Jesus. And in some way, I guess he must have been disillusioned with Jesus, maybe because he'd not engaged power with power. Maybe that was something to do with it. I don't know. But Judas was there. It's very, very, look at how Jesus, Judas was the treasurer we heard last year. Dear Jane Roger was the most honest, upright person I've ever, painfully so, frustratingly so at times. We had to deal together with the Charities Commission and CAF Bank about money that was going to various parts of the world and tracking it and was it being used for charitable purposes. And, you know, we were sending cash to the Ukraine in people's pockets. And Jane used to get quite, how are we going to cover this off within the regs? And I was a bit more, I don't know. But Jane was so honest, so straight, so upright. She was the best. Sorry, James. She was just so good at this and so fantastic and honest and upright. And here we have this group led by Jesus, and the role of treasurer is given to the thief. He kept the bag and helped himself to what we had read that last week, didn't we? Extraordinary. Work that into your thinking, Saltersford Church. Transition team? Yeah. Next treasurer. James, you step down. We'll find somebody much less upright than you today. It is amazing, isn't it? Jesus knew, and he let it all just go. Didn't stand in the way. I'm not saying we should do that for one moment. But I just stand back in awe at the way Jesus handled Judas. He loved them to the end. Did Jesus love Judas to the end? We don't know. By the end of this weekend, Jesus had taken his own life. He had realized what he'd done, I think. Somehow, the horror of what he'd done in betraying Jesus hit him. And he could not handle it. And he ended up taking his own life. And I don't know. What happened in his final hours? I know Jesus loved him to the end. Who knows what happened to Judas? Maybe we'll find out one day. Maybe we'll bump into him. Who knows? Somebody who says, oh, I was with Jesus. Oh, who are you? My name's Judas. What? I don't know. I'm making it up here. We don't know. All we know is Jesus' love was beyond anything. He loved them to the end. And we don't know what the end was for Judas beyond the fact that he took his own life. So then, we're running out of time. This is such a great chapter. Sorry. Judas leaves, and it was night. Spiritual night, as well as the fact that the sun had gone down. And then Jesus begins this last, it's about 4.5 chapters. And I'm actually going to take I'm going to take you some homework. Alan set us some homework as a teacher. He set us some homework in our house group in the week. I'm going to set you some homework, and that is to read these four chapters, starting at the middle of chapter 13, right the way through to the end of chapter 17. It'll take you about 20 minutes. 20 minutes that we're going to spread out over 8 weeks or more. And it's 20 minutes of Jesus speaking, which is full of such profound truth that it's great to be able to take those 8 weeks. But this was the last hour. This was the last time that Jesus was ever going to be with those 12. They didn't know it. This was the last time they were going to be together forever, really, in that way. As a little group, band of brothers, this was it. And Jesus has got some things he wants to get across. And he begins this sort of monologue, interrupted a little bit. Peter says something, Thomas says something, Philip says something. But it's basically Jesus handing over. And John, looking back down the years, it must have been engraved in his memory, this last precious hour that they had with Jesus. And he sets it out. So these last 4.5 chapters are about 20 minutes in real time. Right, so he says, my children, I will be with you only a little longer. This is verse 33. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now. Where I am going, you cannot come. A new command I give you, John quoted this, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. John says this three times in his gospel, I think. I think I counted three. And again in his epistle, when he said it, this was a new commandment, but it's an old commandment. This was central. Love one another, he says. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. And by this, everyone will know that you are, there you go, that you are my disciples if you love one another. And Simon Peter asked him, Lord, where are you going? And Jesus replied, where I'm going you cannot follow now, but you will follow later. Peter asked, Lord, why can't I follow you now? I'll lay down my life for you. Then Jesus answered, "Will you really lay down your life for me? Very truly, I tell you, before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God. My Father's house has many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you that I'm going there to prepare." Sorry. "If it were not so, would I have told you that I am going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am." For me, they've put the chapter break right in the middle of this, in such a bad place. Jesus is speaking. I know we too often stop after Jesus' word to Peter, that "you will disown me 3 times. Jesus didn't stop there. He carried straight on. "Don't let your hearts be troubled. I can wash your feet." Betrayal, it shouldn't be love and betrayal. It should be love through betrayal. That was Jesus. It didn't matter what. Love was there. "Very truly, I tell you, before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. Do not let your hearts be troubled. My Father's house has many rooms." And I just want to leave this with you. "I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am." That's such a fantastic promise for us. We're going to go on through this last 20 minutes over the next 8 weeks, as I said, and it's packed full of stuff that is so important for us to imbibe. But that's why I encourage you, if you can, just read it through in one go and allow the Spirit to wash it through you and over you, and be as intimate with Jesus as he was with his disciples in that last earnest hour. That last half an hour probably, because after chapter 17 they go out across the brook of Kidron to the Garden of Gethsemane, and that's where Judas is waiting. So when Jesus said, "What you do quickly," it was all done within a couple of hours, and Jesus had been arrested and the ball was rolling. So it's a very short space of time. There is so much in these chapters. Just let it wash over you over the coming weeks and allow God to speak to you through it, and bless you and lift you up.